Last week we Kip had Forget Not All the Benefits of God, which was fantastic. Always good to remember stuff. It's always good to get that reminder. This week, what's been on my heart for more than a week is just the favor of God in our lives. Favor of God that personally that you have situations that come up in your life, specific things. Like Sid, he got some of the finest care in the country, favor of God on his life. Because I know for a fact there's a lot of hospitals and doctors that maybe not have the same favor on his life and the same care. And, God watches out for his kids. And it's such a wonderful thing. But God's favor is there. And today I just wanted to talk about and share about God's favor and God's fingerprints on our lives. Because sometimes things happen and good things happen and maybe everything's going fine, but behind the scenes God's there. He's just working things because he loves us so much. It's just like, you have a little baby, and Regina's holding the little grandchild. She wants the best for that little boy. Just she'll do anything, just for the best of that, little boy. So then that's the way God is toward us. I mean, he cares about us and he does things for us. And all we have to do is kind of push into God and say, God, I want to know more about you. I want to follow you, Father. I want to walk in the way that you want me to walk. And one example that happened years ago, and I was looking for a job, and this was the favor of God on my life. I wasn't going into Waco at that time, but I moved to Minnesota with his friend John Shanehite and his wife, and I needed a job. So I got up there on a weekend, and on a Monday I got on the phone and made a couple of phone calls, and then the second call, I was a restaurant manager at the time. I had run 24-hour restaurants, Sambo's and Denny's was similar. So I called the Denny's. It was like 2 miles from the house, and I said, "Hey, I'm looking for a job." She says, "Oh, can you come in today and talk?" So yeah, I can come in after lunch. So I went in, sat in the booth. So I'm sitting in the booth and I see her come around the counter there, and she looks and looks at me and then goes back in the office. So okay. So she comes out, we start talking, and it was like it wasn't an interview. It was just how you doing, talking, conversational advice. So I got hired. I mean, it was just there was no toil finding this job. It was just so easy. Come to find out that she hired me because there was a guy that used to work for her that I reminded that she I reminded her of that person. So she really liked this guy. They got along really good. So she saw me and she goes, "Oh, God, I look just like him." So she went back in the office and she told me the story. She calls the district manager. "If I like this guy, can I hire him?" Okay. So she hires me on the spot. But it wasn't even an interview. It was just it was like the favor of God. But I was really pursuing God. And that's why that came about. It wasn't just because I was so smart or I was lucky. It wasn't that at all. It was not that at all. And that's just the favor of God. And that's one example. And I'm sure you could probably go around the room. Everyone could give a story how God worked and you became, you were favored in situations and work situations or family situations or whatever. So it's a wonderful thing. I looked up favor, a definition from just the dictionary. It's approval, kindness, goodwill, acceptance. And in the definition, favor and grace, so close together, grace, unmerited favor, God's undeserved kindness and favor toward people, And that's because God loves us. And favor is evidence of the Father's delight and approval, the Father's presence, protection, guidance in our lives. I mean, what a wonderful thing to have in our lives. Everybody, unbelievers are going around just thinking everything's fine, but we have God on our side. So turn to Genesis 6:8. Genesis 6:8. So we're going to look at the first use here. Genesis 6. And let's look at let's start at verse 5. Just give us some context what was going on. In Genesis 6, 5, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was evil continually. So there's the situation of the world. It's pretty rough, pretty bad. But in verse 8, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord, and found where God initiated toward Noah, and in the eyes of the Lord, God's approval. In his eyes, there was approval. And in verse 9, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. And that's pretty amazing. I mean, there was favor in his life. And then I started looking at this and go, what influenced Noah to have this drive and this want to walk with God? The whole world's a mess. It's a mess. So something had to influence him to get to this point. He just didn't happen on his own. So I started looking at the lineage of Noah. So people came before him, like his dad, his grandfather. And then in verse 532, it says, and Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. But then I started looking at the lineage, and his father was Lamech. And then he had Lamech, and then he had his father was Methuselah. So when I looked at this, Lamech, he was alive around 50 years when Adam was still alive. And Methuselah, he overlapped Noah for 600 years and overlapped Adam for 243 years. There could have been a lot of conversations going on there. Didn't have the Bible, but there could have been some really nice conversations. Enoch, he was a prophet. And that was Enoch was Methuselah's father. And Enoch was a prophet, and he walked with God, and he overlapped with Adam for about 308 years. So when I was looking at this, I'm thinking, okay, there had to be some wonderful conversations, because Methuselah. He lived. He's the longest, oldest person in the Bible. So he had a connection with Adam all the way to Noah. So there could have been some wonderful things talked about. So knowledge was available about God to influence Noah's respect and honor for God. And there was no written word at this time. But then I thought too, is these men were young, and Adam was still there. I'm thinking, maybe this happened. Can we go to Adam's house? I want to hear about the garden again. What happened in the garden? What did they? How did this happen? How did that happen? I mean, you know how kids are. They're just inquisitive. But my mind started spinning on those kinds of conversations. But you can see how Noah was influenced. I mean, there were some men. There was some drive to know God and to follow God. It wasn't just boom. It just happened on his own. Go to Psalm 5. Just going to look at just a handful of verses here. Psalm 5. But let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy, because thou defendest them. Let them also that love thy name be joyful in thee, for thou, Lord, wilt bless the righteous. With favor wilt thou compass him as with a shield. So God's favor is there. You know, but we need to pursue into God. Psalm 84. 84:11. And Psalm 84:11, for the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord will give grace and glory, favor. The Lord will give favor. No good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Yeah.
So, it's not going to withhold anything good, just like a parent with a young child. Not going to withhold at all. Psalm 90, verse 17. This is a beautiful verse. 90, Psalm 90, verse 17. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish thou the work of our hands upon us. Yea, the work of our hands establish thou it. God's delightful. He's delightful. And his presence is favorable on our lives. Go to Proverbs. I'm going to look at a couple more verses, and then we're going to look at some examples. Proverbs chapter 3. Everybody knows this section. Well, it's a great section. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 1. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. And length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thine heart. So shalt thou find what?
Favor
and good understanding. Boy, having that favor and then the good understanding is wonderful. And you don't have to go there. In Luke 2:52, this is about Jesus. Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. So Jesus Christ wasn't God. He grew in stature and in favor with God and man. And you see that that's the sequence. It's got to be God first, not man. A lot of people pursue favor with men first. That's wrong. You pursue God first, and then having favor with men will follow. And that's the way, you know, a couple of the examples will actually show that. Matter of fact, all three examples will show this. But that's the sequence of how it should be. Proverbs chapter 8. That's how it should be, because God said so. That's it. Proverbs 8:35. For whoso findeth me findeth life and shall obtain favor of the Lord. So pursue God first, and you're going to have that favor in your life. So we're going to look at three examples. And this is this favor, and kind of think about, you know, how God is working behind the scenes, working things to bless his people for the wonderful outcomes, because God's always a God that takes care of us. He always watches out for us. He doesn't, you know, if we fall, he picks us up and brings us to our desired haven, places that we want to be in our lives, you know, that we've talked about. And sometimes, you know, things happen and, you know, we have to deviate. But we continue to focus on God. So let's go to Genesis chapter 39. Genesis 39. One of the great examples in the Bible. Genesis 39, verse 2. So this is Joseph. Joseph was sold by his brothers into slavery. Nice bros. Anyway, you know, Joseph was quite the man. He never got bitter. But in verse 2, and the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, favor in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over his house and all that he had put into his hand. You know, Potiphar, you know, he was Egyptian officer, but he was smart enough to know, this guy's got something going on here. I'm going to let him run the whole show. I'm going to let him run the whole show because I don't have to worry about anything. So it's great. So go to verse 19. So everything's going well. Potiphar's estate's doing well. Joseph's doing well. And then the wife gets a little wacky here. And she's bored. She goes after him, does a pass. And in verse 19, and it came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. You know, he's basically saying he tried to sexually abuse me. And Joseph's master took Joseph and put him in the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison. So he did nothing wrong, but he got set up. But verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. I mean, how convenient that is. So he gets into prison. All of a sudden, the prison keeper, the guy running the place, goes, I really like this Joseph. This is the nicest guy I've ever met. He's smart, intelligent. He's got good ideas. Verse 22, and the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. They got pizza on Fridays after he took over. That was... And then verse 23, the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. What a wonderful thing. 41:37. There's a whole lot to this. So I'm just kind of looking at the favor of God in these examples. So, I mean, each one of these examples is a whole teaching, a whole thing. So, what did I say? 41:37. Thank you. So Pharaoh had a dream. No one could interpret it. So Joseph actually interprets the dream because he's walking with God. God gives him the interpretation. And verse 37, and the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. So he interprets the dream. It's a good outcome. And everybody was like, man, that's fantastic. This is fantastic. And then the Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such as one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house according unto thy word, shall all the people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater. So you see the favor on his life. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So one day he's in prison, next day he's running the whole place. He's got his own chariot. He's got one of the big chariots, you know, the best horse. He's got everything. And then, you know, he gets a nice looking woman too, and to marry. So, I mean, it was like just everything was hitting in a row. God was taking care of him because he respected God. So the next one example is Esther. So if you go to Psalms and back up two books, Psalms, Job, and then you got Esther. And Esther is one of, you know, we saw the definition of favor, you know, protection, guidance, security, and you see this here. It's pretty amazing. I'm going to start in verse 5. This is King Ahasuerus.
What chapter?
Oh, I'm sorry, chapter 1. Chapter 1. Esther, chapter 1. So, this king was pretty prominent. He had a lot of providences. He's doing celebrations here. He's doing feasts. I mean, just success upon success upon success. And in verse 5, and when the days were expired of all these parties and celebrations, the king made a feast unto all the people that were present in Shushan, the palace, both unto great and small, 7 days in the court of the garden of the king's palace. Okay. And then let's go down to, go down to verse 9. Go to verse 8, I'm sorry. And the drinking was according to the law. None did compel, for so the king had appointed to all officers of his house that they should do according to every man's pleasure. So this was just a fantastic, gigantic party. And then Vashti, the queen, made a feast for the women. So she made her own little party here for the women who belonged to the king. So on the seventh day of this feast, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded these people, all these servants. I'm going to just kind of go over that. Seven chamberlains that served in the presence of Ahasuerus, the king, to bring Vashti, the queen, before the king with the crown royal to show the people and the princess her beauty, for she was fair to look on. So this was like a culmination, okay? A big party. I'm going to bring out the queen. But the queen refused to come at the king's commandment. So this was a problem. So what happens was, so they go through and he talks with his counselors there, and they go, hey, you know, we got to replace her. So that's exactly what happened. So they came up with a plan to replace her. So in chapter 2, verse 3, and the king appointed officers in all the providences of the kingdom that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan, the palace, to the house of women, unto the custody of Hege, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them. And let the maiden which pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti, and the thing pleased the king, and he did so. Okay, so what happened? They're bringing in all these beautiful women into this palace, and we're going to pick a new queen, but we got to get them all together. And then in verse 7, and he brought Hadassah, this is Esther, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, this is Mordecai, Esther was an orphan. Her mom and dad were died. Mordecai adopted her and raised her as his own. For she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. So it came to pass when the king's commandment and his decrees were heard, and when many maidens were gathered together into the Shushan, the palace, to the custody of Hegel, that Esther was brought also unto the king's house to the custody of Haggai, keeper of the women. And the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him. Sounds like a little favor here. So the guy running the situation with all these young ladies took a liking to her right off the bat. And he speedily gave her things for purification with such things as belonged to her and seven maidens, which were meet to be given her and out of the king's house. And he preferred her and her maids unto the best palace of the house of the women. Go to 15. Now, when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come to go in unto the king, she required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, had appointed. There's favor there. Because what happened was, she's got to go into the king, and this guy knew the king. He know what he knew the king. He know what he liked. He know outfits, everything. He knew everything about. So that favor, she got that favor. And so when she went before the king, it was just optimum. It was just the best that it could be. But the favor was there. And Esther obtained favor in the sight when she's in there, and everybody sees her, obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. So they looked on her and goes, wow, wow. Another translation would, she sure looks good. I'm not sure what version that's in, but I don't know. I get lost in versions. So Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus. I could say it before I got here, but I don't remember. And into his house royal in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgin, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. So it wasn't even fair with the other women. I mean, she was so far ahead of everyone else, just beautiful, and her personality must have just clicked, just amazing. But you know, this is just the favor of God in her life. So she's queen, she gets to be queen, and then of course you know how things go on. Okay, this guy named then there was a problem. This Haman guy, he didn't like Mordecai. You know, he was wanted to get rid of him, and he wanted to actually he wanted to kill all the Jews, all of them in one day. So what happened? So that's a real problem here. So what happened was, God's got this figured out. So she's working with Mordecai, and Mordecai is telling her what to do. And in chapter 3, verse 8, and we'll see what Haman was doing. And Haman said unto the king Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all people. Neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore, it is not for the king's prophet to suffer them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those who have charge of the business to bring into the king's treasuries. Okay. So Haman was high up. He was promoted, and he had this. And so there was a law written. So there was a day appointed that all this was going to happen. So what happened in, go to chapter 5. So what happened was, Mordecai talked to Esther and said, hey, you need to go in the king and talk to the king for us. So she was nervous, because if you go in unappointed, you could be killed. Okay. So they prayed, she prayed. And so she got her, you know, she got her outfit on. And chapter 5, verse 1. Now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel and stood in the inner court of the king's house and over against the king's house. And the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house and over against the gate of the house. And it was so, when the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, that she obtained what?
Favor.
No coincidence here, none whatsoever. And the king held out the sepulcher that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. Then said the king unto her, what wilt thou, Queen Esther? And what is thy request? And it shall be given to thee to half of the kingdom. So that's pretty good favor. Pretty good favor for this situation. So what happened was, so she had favor. They had a dinner, you know, with the king, Haman, and Esther. And so the tide got turned on Haman. And it wasn't good for him. But because of the favor that was upon, you know, Esther and even Mordecai. I mean, Mordecai was a big piece of this. I mean, he was high up in command in the kingdom. But because of favor, God's purpose, we saved a whole nation of Israel. So I would call that favor. And let's go to our last example of Ruth. Ruth. And this is one of protection, guidance, security, and acceptance. Chapter 1, the book of Ruth. So in chapter 1, now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judea, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Euphrates and the Bethlehem, Judea. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab, and the name of one of them was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. And they dwelled there about 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion died, also both of them, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. So this put her in a jam here. Husband's dead, and the two sons are dead, okay? So then Naomi goes, I got to go back to my home country. So go to verse 14. So what happens was Naomi tells the two Moab women, Orpah and Ruth, go back to your, you know, your homeland, stay there with your brethren, and I'm going to go back to Bethlehem. And so in verse 14, so she tells them, you know, go back, we're going to separate. And verse 14, and they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, Naomi, but Ruth clave unto her. And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. And Ruth said, and this just changed her whole life. Ruth right here, this changed her whole life. Entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. That's a pretty big decision. I mean, that really changed the trajectory of her destiny right there. You know, it was because of God, because of the conversations, you know, being around Naomi all those years, you know, that respect for God and his word, and those conversations that she said, I don't want to go back to the old way of life. There was nothing there for me. But with you, I've seen sparks of life. I've been blessed. I've been thankful. I've been thankful to be, you know, with you. So I'm going to stick with you no matter what, even until death. So go to verse 20. So Naomi, she goes back with Ruth into her home country, Bethlehem, and in verse 20, and she said unto them, so the people would say, oh, it's Naomi, she's back. And she said unto them, call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. She was in a bad place. And I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. God doesn't work that way. He doesn't work that way. Why then call me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? So she wasn't in a right frame of mind, but she had enough sense to go back to her home country where she had relatives, you know, kind of like the prodigal son when he's eating with the pigs. That's better at home. I'm going to go back home, okay? So this is what she's doing. She's going back home to Bethlehem. And let's go to Ruth chapter 2. So they're back there. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's mighty man of wealth, the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. So this is just information that God is sharing here. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said unto Naomi, Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. So they need food. She needed food. And then Ruth said, hey, I'm gonna go out and glean. I'm going to work, and I'm going to bring some food home. Verse 3, and she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap was too light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was the kindred of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless you. So look at those salutations. That was pretty neat. Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this? Who is she? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabite Dish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. And so she came and hath continued even from the morning until now, that she tarried a little in the house. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? You know, my daughter, I mean, that's, you know, a little sensitivity, a little caring, a little tenderness there, calling her my daughter. Go not glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. So, hey, stick by my maidens and get the food here. You can glean. Let thine eyes be in the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? There's some protection there. And when thou art at thirst, go into the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. It's a little favor here. He's taking care of her, making sure that she's well taken care of. Then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, why have I found grace, favor in thine eyes, that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered and said unto her, it hath been fully showed me that all thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother in the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knowest not therefore. So he recognized that. He recognized what she gave up, you know, to support Naomi, to love her and take care of her. And I was looking at this and I thought, this guy, Boaz, is a pretty deep guy. So I started looking around. Lo and behold, his mom was Rahab. Rahab, when the two spies went in Jericho, and she took them in and hit them, saved their life. And she talked about how she respected God, the God of Israel, and her life was saved because of that. So when I was reading this, I thought, this connected in his heart. This really connected in his heart, because Rahab took a chance. She really took a chance. It saved her life. She followed the one true God. She lived with the Israelites, and it made a difference. And she actually got married. And then Boaz was her son. So when he saw Ruth, to me, I'm not positive, but to me, there's a click here. There's a click. Verse 12, the Lord, and then Boaz says to her, the Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. Right, this is a man of God. This is a guy that loves the word. He loves his family. He's a reputable man. He's a rich man. But It's because of his respect for, you know, God and his word. He's a man that keeps his word. Then she said, "Let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thine handmaids." And Boaz said unto her, "At mealtime, come thou hither and eat of the bread, and dip thy morsel in the vinegar." And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, and she did eat, and was sufficed, and left. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not. And let fall some of the handfuls of purpose for her." Put a bunch of grain out. Put a bunch of grain out. Purpose for her. "And leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not." Set her up. Say, "Hey, we're going to make sure she's got everything she needs and more." So she gleaned in the field until evening, and beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about an epoth of barley. And I looked it up, and it was about 10 days of food for two people. And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw that she had gleaned, and she brought forth and gave to her, and she had reserved after she was finished, basically sufficed. And her mother-in-law said unto her, "Where hast thou gleaned today, and where wroughtest thou? Blessed be that did take knowledge of thee." And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought, and said, "The man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz." She didn't know Boaz. And then Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be the Lord." Remember in chapter 1 where she was really beat down and negative? Mm-hmm. And then verse this right here, "Blessed be the be of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead." And Naomi said unto her, "The man is a near kinsman unto us, one of the next kinsmen." So Naomi, getting this inspiration that God, she's not left out there by herself, you know, with God. And Ruth the Moabite said, "He said unto me also, thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all the harvest." And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that thou goest out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field." So stick right there. So they kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of the barley harvest and of the wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. That was about 2 to 4 months between the two harvests. You had the barley and then the wheat. So it could be somewhere in that time frame. So then Naomi, she's caring about what's going to happen with Ruth. Boy, people with heart and caring. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, verse 1, "Shall I not seek the rest for thee, that it may be well with thee?" So Naomi goes. She knew the law. She knew about Boaz. So she comes up with this plan. And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou hast? Behold, he winneth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself, therefore, and anoint thee, and put on thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known to the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet, and lay thy down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. And she said unto her, "All that thou sayest unto me will I do." And she went down unto the floor and did according to all her mother-in-law bade her. Obedience brings deliverance. Verse 7, "But when Boaz had eaten and drank, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down in the end of the heap of corn, and she came softly, uncovered his feet, and laid her down." And this was something that showed respectfulness, protection, redemption. "And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself. And behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, 'Who art thou?' And she answered, 'I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman.'" He knew what this meant. as a near kinsman. He was full aware. And he said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter." So his response in the situation was of tenderness, called her my daughter, "for thou hast shown more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, insomuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich." This leads you to believe that Boaz was definitely older than her. And she was basically at the beginning, she was taking care of Naomi, basically, you know, making sure she had food, making sure that she was taken care of. And then the next step here, you know, the latter end is basically because Naomi was really looking for a kinsman redemption. She wanted the land to be bought back and her bloodline to continue and her family lineage. And Ruth was part of that because she was married to one of the sons. So, and he understood this. I mean, this is pretty amazing. Now, it's shown more kindness. And verse 11, "And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know thou art a what?" I mean, he knew a good one when he saw it. I mean, and the whole city knew it. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, there were some incidents. But she was, this is a catch. This is a catch to Mary. "And now, it is true that I am a near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I. Tarry thou this night, and it shall be in the morning that he will perform unto thee the part of the kinsman well. Let him do the kinsman's part." So basically, he's gonna take action the next day, and he's going to go to the kinsman, the first kinsman, and say, "Hey, you need to buy this land." And let's go to the next chapter. Verse 1. I don't want to give away. Chapter 4, verse 1. We're getting near the end here. "Then went Boaz up to the gate and set him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, with whom he said, 'Ho, such is one.'" Johnny does that on the main line. "Ho!" turn aside, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men, these are witnesses, elders of the city, and he sat down. And he said unto the kinsman, "Naomi, that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land, which was our brother Amalek's." And he thought to amortize these, saying, "But it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people, if thou shalt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me, and that I may know, for there is none to redeem it besides thee, and I am after thee." And he said, "I will redeem it." So he's following the law. The first kinsman gets the right. Then Boaz said, "What day thou buyest?" He said, "What day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also the Ruth of the Moabitess, the wife of the dead," that's son, right, "to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance." And the kinsman said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it." So what happened was, verse 8, "Therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, 'Buy it for thee.' So he drew off his shoe, cinched the deal, and so what happened is he bought the land, and Naomi was thrilled. And then in verse 13, you can find here, "So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife, and she went, and he went unto her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son." And then if you go to verse 17, the son's name was Obed, and is the father of Jesse and the father of David. So this Moabitess got in a pretty good situation. Got in the Christ line. Yeah. She actually got in the Christ line because of obedience and pursuing God. And the favor that was on her life because she cared for Naomi. She just loved her, and she just did her best wholeheartedly, and God took care of her. Mm-hmm. Took care of Naomi, Boaz, thrilled to have this beautiful young woman as a wife. I mean, everybody was blessed. And then you can see that, you know, he was the father of Jesse and the father of David. I mean, that's pretty spectacular to me. Just to kind of wrap it up, a couple of comments. Boaz and Ruth were in, basically they were in the Christ line. It was a great honor to be in the Christ line. For us, we have Christ in us. Are we favored?
Yeah.
Are we favored? The common denominator of these examples was pursuing the one true God. It wasn't selfishness. It was pursuing God. Pursuing God brings favor with God and man. You pursue God, the favor is with God first, and then with man it comes afterwards. God's favor brings unmerited kindness, provision, goodwill, protection. And God's plan for each one of us lives in extremely intricate and well-planned things that God does for us. And once we start pursuing God and the truth of his words, things change. Our destinies change. So let's keep pursuing our Father, because you can't lose. And we have the favor on our lives.